Hello and welcome back to a special edition of Editing Aloud. We're live from our studios in Johannesburg, and we've had a remarkable budget today in the sense that for the first time in a quarter of a century of ANC rule almost, it's the party has crossed its own Rubicon and raised VAT for the first time from 14% to 15%, a line many thought would never move because it hurts the poor and the rich were there to be taxed, but we suddenly found ourselves in a position where the rich have been taxed probably to their limits at the moment, and the government has made a very, very big decision in going ahead and cutting VAT today. And before we go on to our panel, we have with us a very special guest, not for very long, and we thank him very much for joining us, but Pravin Gordhan is on the line. And Pravin, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Raising VAT must have been a very tough decision. Is there something you would have done easily?
Hi, good evening, Peter. Hi. And good evening to whoever is listening to this.
Yes, Tim, Ray, and Rob.
Hi, Tim. Hi, Rob. I wonder what they would have done if they were in the position that the Treasury found itself in after the announcement that higher education would be free. And I think there were many constraints that had to be taken into account. The performance of SARS, the performance of the economy, the necessity to keep debt under control, to demonstrate some fiscal consolidation in the next 3 years. And in those circumstances, finding that kind of money is a difficult proposition. So there's been a lot of sacrifice in terms of expenditure cuts on the one hand, it would appear.
Yeah.
I haven't had time to look at all of the numbers.
Yeah.
So it would have had to be one of the considerations, I imagine.
Would you?
We did indicate, if you remember, that when we talked about the NHI probably a few years ago, that the full implementation of NHI would result in the necessity to raise VAT amongst other taxes, and that the country needed to start talking about it. Well, I suppose the moment has come.
Yeah. Well, we've got to the moment, and the NHI is just a dot on the horizon at the moment. So it's become a lot sooner, or in a different form, or for different reasons. Once you've taken the decision to raise VAT, though, why not go for broke and raise it by 2 percentage points rather than merely one, because you may have to do it again?
Well, I think this is a difficult time. I think the focus now has to be on how you inspire confidence in the economy, how we get, as the President has said, investment into the country, and get the growth factor beginning to kick in, which I imagine in the next 18 months or so would begin to happen if all things remain the same and better than they have been for quite a while now.
Yeah.
So I think as circumstances change, the considerations will change. But at the same time, I think we must recognize that the impact on the poor is a genuine one.
Yeah.
And a serious one. We shouldn't underplay that. As will be,
Pravin, 85 billion rands worth of spending cuts over the next 3 years, because a lot of that would have gone on to infrastructure, which would have made poor people's lives better.
Absolutely. So I think this budget and the choices that had been made must possibly be seen as a once-off.
The price of the Zuma years.
In some ways, yes. I think we need to be frank about that.
Yeah.
And start focusing on, you know, the factors that the President outlined in SONA in terms of the social compact, the input that different sectors need to make, because it's in our ability, I think, to pull ourselves out of this morass that we've been placed in.
One last question, Pravin Gordhan. You were quoted as saying the other day, I think at a function at Worksmen's, the attorneys, that you would be available to serve again in cabinet for about a year. In other words, I think the implication would be until probably the next election. Do we hear you right? And do you have a Position of choice?
As you know, Peter, you've been around long enough as a Tim and Rob that that's not our choice. It's the choice of the president, firstly. Secondly, there's no guarantees about being in cabinet or not either. And thirdly, that was a bit of a tongue-in-cheek comment. I think all three of you know people like myself well enough to know that we've been at the service of the public for a long time.
Yeah.
And if there's something meaningful one can contribute to, one will always be available.
Well, you've contributed to this program, so this evening, Praveen, thank you so much for joining us. I don't want to keep you. There are probably parties going on in Cape Town. But thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me. Bye-bye.
And panel, come back to the VAT thing. Ray, just from a political point of view, I mean, it's huge in a way.
It's very big. I think that it's particularly in the current political context, because Ramaphosa's backers are within the left of the ANC and in the trade union movement and in the SACP. And this is really sort of, you know, one of the things I think that would not go down well with that constituency at all. So it must have been a very tough decision to sort of alienate his strongest support base, having just assumed the presidency. And I think it gives you an idea of the corner that they were in.
Get it done quickly then. Get Malusi Gigaba to do it.
Get Malusi Gigaba to announce it, and then
get
rid of him.
I don't think Ramaphosa's election had anything to do with this budget. This budget was written long before, and actually they had no other choices. I mean, VAT increase, like Praveen just said, I mean, that's basically, that was all you could do.
Well, Zuma, I mean, presumably the free education thing was a genuine shock, yeah?
Sure.
I mean, they've now budgeted 57 billion rand for it.
I mean, it's almost equal it's much more than they get from the percentage point increase in VAT.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's a rather strange thing, because don't forget, you know, it increases exponentially, right? So your first year, you are subsidizing X number of students.
Yeah.
The next year, it's 2X.
Yeah.
The next year, it's 3X.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I mean, it's staggering.
Yeah.
It would be it's a great thing to do if you can afford to do it. But we've spent our money on other things, and it's down the drain and it's gone. We've got Hilary Joffe with us. Hilary, I've just been reading your op-ed for tomorrow morning, and very good it is too. It's given me all sorts of opinions I could pretend on my own. But your thoughts are that the ratings agencies will like the VAT increase.
I think that's everybody's thought. If you look at the actual numbers, the deficit didn't even come down that much.
Yeah.
But as a gesture and an indication of seriousness about reining in the deficit, the VAT increase is a really powerful signal.
Would they do it again?
I think they are likely to do it again once they've broken the ice. Yeah. If they need money to finance the national health insurance system, that's very likely. But I think you know, one of the things that is so much a part of this budget, well, there are two things. The first is that this is a real legacy budget, that there were actually very few choices because of what 9 years of President Zuma bequeathed to us.
Yeah.
And quite directly bequeathed to us in terms of this kind of higher education poison pill. And none of that has been the subject of proper debate. I mean, would we have made that trade-off knowing that basically we had to hike taxes by 36 billion and cut spending by 85 billion, much of it to infrastructure that matters for growth and to poor people, to spend 57 billion on higher education. Now, you can say lots of good things about what that spending on higher education will do for poor families and for employability. But if we had to make the trade-off properly, thoughtfully, would we make that trade-off? I'm not sure we would.
And Hilary, can we save 85 billion rand in 3 years? I mean, where will that money come from? Is this infrastructure or public sector pay cuts or public sector job cuts?
No, the problem is it isn't. The problem is it's not current spending. It's not pay cuts. It's obviously not cuts to social grants. What a lot of it is what economists would regard as quite bad cuts, cuts to infrastructure spending, capital spending, not current spending, if you like, and particularly to two kinds of entities. The one is to provinces and municipalities, and municipalities will really take quite a hit, and that's our roads and our water reticulation and our electricity at local level. And the other is to public entities like SANRAL, PRASA. South African Revenue Services took quite a hit. Now, in some of those cases, it's not a real cut because some of those entities weren't spending the money anyway. But I think the bad part of the cut is, you know, politicians always find it easy to cut investment spending. And that's really what they've done.
Do you get a sense down in Cape Town today of when Cyril Ramaphosa might appoint new people to his cabinet so that he can get on with confronting these huge challenges?
I don't think anyone thinks that Malusi Gigaba is going to be there for very long, and that there will be a new finance minister very soon. I don't have a strong sense of it, but I think the expectation is that once Cyril Ramaphosa has consulted, we will have a new cabinet, which will start to implement the kinds of measures that we need to unlock investment and growth.
Hilary, thanks very much for joining us. We've got to go to a break.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Ray Hartley, what does Cyril Ramaphosa do now? I mean, he's got the formalities of opening parliament and the budget and out of the way. He's been in Cape Town forever, it seems. But this time last week, when this program sat down to speak, he wasn't even the president.
It's been an astonishing week. Yeah. I mean, I think that he's got to get the cabinet sorted out, and I'm sure that's a priority over the next week or 2 weeks.
I was amused today when Malusi Gigaba stood up at the podium for less than a minute, and he turned to Ramaphosa and saying, "How long have I got?
How much time do I have?
How much time do I have?"
I think sorting out the cabinet. I think what Ramaphosa has done is he's used the Ramaphosa spring very effectively.
Yeah.
So he's made a statement that this is not a populist government. We will make hard decisions about VAT, for example, in the budget, and a whole lot of, you know, additional stuff which has got a few months to play out about trimming down the size of the executive, getting rid of unnecessary departments, amalgamating departments, restructuring government, and obviously that ties in with this cost-saving exercise. He's got to use the time that he's got now where there's a positive national sentiment around him and where people are prepared to say things like, well, the budget we're paying for the Zuma years, not we're now paying for Ramaphosa's policies, which would be a much tougher thing for him.
Yeah.
So he's got to use this time, I think, to make as many of these interventions as he can.
Is there a sense, Rob, do you think, in which Cyril can use his use the powers he's got as president to almost divest himself of those powers so that no one else can ever have them again? I mean, in the way that Zuma had them. I mean, they're almost untrammeled. You can do pretty much whatever you like. I mean, you can actually put your hand up and say, oh, we're going to have a free education tomorrow. It's like a Woody Allen movie, you know, where the guy becomes the dictator and he says, well, you've all got to wear your underpants on the outside.
Yeah,
it just becomes the law.
I've seen him walking a lot, but not wearing his underpants on the outside just yet. But
I mean,
he doesn't actually have much scope to do that, I don't think. I think he's got a very short period to, like Ray said, a short period to address it. And he doesn't actually have as much scope as people think to keep doing that. He, for example, this budget today, if it hadn't been this, if it had been more licentious, he would never have got away with it. The ratings agencies would have downgraded us, and I think it would have been a far worse trajectory over the next coming months. So I think that he doesn't actually have the power that he thinks he has. He has very narrow bounds that he can step in at the moment to keep the country on track.
You're shaking your head, Tim Cohen.
No, I mean, I think he has to make really some very fundamental breaks with the past. I mean, I really think
absolutely. He can't just do what he wants. I mean, for example, he has to get rid of Zwani, he has to get rid of Batabele Dlamini.
Yeah. You know, I'm sort of taking that all for granted.
Yeah.
But there's more to it than that. They have to find a way to be a government for everybody and not a government for, you know, sections of the population and satisfying this constituency and that constituency, you know, all of that sort of politicking that, you know, we've just got so used to, you know, they have to find a way to make a real clean break with that. And they have to also find a different economic philosophy, you know, in the same way. And by doing that, they might be able to encourage business to adjust its open the possibility for sort of finding each other. Because I just don't think, a series of solid tweaks within government, that's not going to fix this problem. I don't think.
But is it up to government to go to business and say, how can we change, or has business got something to, you know, to leave out?
I mean, it's obviously, you know, it's a sort of mutual kind of strengthening sort of process, you know, government's got, business has got a few initiatives going, which are, you know, they're quite interesting. They're sort of new ideas. But it's those kinds of things that...
Put together a 1.5 billion rand, what is it, employment scheme.
Yes.
It's pretty pathetic, really. I mean, it's not a lot of money. It's a drop in the ocean. I mean, after all of the damage Zuma did, surely it's got to come to the party.
Well, it's a 1 million... theoretically, the plan is that it's a 1 million... job opportunity, you know, intern program.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think that's, you know, this is a good start, I think.
Yeah.
You know, you something to work off.
Yeah.
There's other things that they could and should do.
Ray, is he a one-term president, or has he got, is there gas there for two?
I think he's got gas for two. I mean...
He's surrounded by absolute, this vicious people around him.
Yeah, but I think he's outmaneuvered them already because, you know, he's talking over the heads of the factionalists within the party to the voters, trying to place the voters, I think, at the center of the nation's politics, where they belong. And if he does that, I think he's got something that they can't take away without losing
damaging
power,
themselves.
Losing the ANC's electoral...
Yeah.
Electoral impact. So he's quite smart. I mean, I think a lot of his activities, his walks in the townships are geared at sort of going past all of that factionalism and talking directly to people about what they want. And most South Africans, what they want is everybody get along and let's find a solution and move forward.
Do you think he has the ability or the desire to try and draw the EFF back into the party?
I think that's his instinct. You know, you can see he's sparring with Malema in Parliament, but in quite a playful way.
Yeah.
You know, and Malema, I think, is finding it very difficult right now because, put the land thing on the agenda very strongly.
Mm.
That leaves Malema with the, you know, we want you to do it quicker.
Yeah.
You know, no, that's not the basis for a political party.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we want the other party to do stuff faster is our manifesto.
Yeah.
You know, he's gonna have to find a way of creating something separate and unique that is worth voting for, that is distinct from the ANC.
Yeah.
Or he's gonna be absorbed.
Yeah.
And I think the DA too has huge crises coming from the Ramaphosa presidency. I think they're facing an ideological crisis in some ways. I mean, Musi Maimane's response has seemed churlish to Ramaphosa. It doesn't have the sort of the high moral ground that he had when he had Zuma there.
No.
I think without Zuma, the opposition parties are a lot weaker.
Ramaphosa is in many ways, you know, Musi Maimane with political credibility and a lot more gravitas.
Mm.
I mean, what separates them on economic policy, all of these things, is very hard to discern because the DA has not developed an identity that is strong enough.
And so we've got a picture on our wall over there of Mosabenze Zwane. This is Presumably because he still has failed to to pitch up to answer questions in Parliament. Sooner or later, somebody has to grab this guy by the scruff of his neck and throw him out of the government, along with a whole lot of other people who have been asking for it for a long time.
Yes.
When do you have the reshuffle taking place?
I think Monday. You know, yeah. I think I mean, I would assume that
there's no point in waiting.
There's no point in waiting. The faster you do it, the better. I'm sure they've had an opportunity to, you know, sort of talk to various people and, you know, do the consultation process. And I think they'd also want to do it in a different way. You know, that's just my suspicion. You know, so this is not a reshuffle that happens at midnight. This is a reshuffle that in which everybody gets together and there's a drinking and celebrating and partying and, you know what I mean? Yeah. You know, they want a different sort of vibe to it. So
as opposed to the night of the long nights, which worked so well for the
exactly.
Well, you know, Ramaphosa criticised Zuma for failing to consult the party properly on you know, so he's in a bit of a corner now. He's got to. He's got
but
to
not
consult.
That he doesn't want to. I mean, that's his instinct.
That
anyway,
is his instinct anyway. But
and is he doing things, Ray? And once again, referring to the book you wrote before the election, you should bring it to the shows. I could hold it up for our viewers. I would. Is all of this to form? I mean, is all of this
absolutely
to be expected? Really,
it is. I mean, it's the Ramaphosa way. Consult, bring everyone on board, don't confront, don't
and say nothing.
Push people into hardening their positions, soften them by treating them with respect, consulting them, involving them. And at the end of the day, if they don't support what comes out of the decision-making process, they are the churlish ones on the outside.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're the ones who are holding back jobs or
but
whatever.
But there's this terrible silence as well accompanying it. I mean, he doesn't sort of speak his mind.
I think he does speak his mind.
I don't think I can
mind.
Take much more.
But
it's
only
a week.
Oh, you don't. You need new president.
It's about time we should move on now.
I think once the playing field is tilted decisively in his favour, then he speaks his mind very strongly and clearly.
All right. Well, we'll see how things go in the weeks ahead. Thank you very, very much for joining us. And we'll see you again next week.